Welcome to episode 56 of the Historic Performance Podcast featuring Dr. Mike McGuigan, professor at the Sports Performance Research Institute of New Zealand at AUT University. Dr. McGuigan, I brought him on because his main research interests are strength and power development and monitoring of training in high-performance athletes. As many of you are strength and conditioning coaches or fitness coaches, one of our main facets is obviously strength and power development and how to assess that. Dr. McGuigan has researched this quite extensively. He's been involved in over 200 research papers, and he's also the associate editor-in-chief at the Journal of Sports Science and Medicine and an associate editor at the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research and the International Journal of Sports Physiology and Performance. Some key highlights from today's podcast is Dr. McGuigan talks about his strength and power research, creating a strength and power profile for athletes, performance testing, and decay rates of strength, power, and speed based on some studies that he's done on rugby union and rugby league players. I think you're really going to enjoy the podcast. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Historic Performance Podcast. Dr. McGuigan, how are you and how's everything going today?
I'm well, thanks, James. Thanks for having me on.
Absolute pleasure to have you on. I'm really happy to be discussing some of your research when it comes to strength and power profiling. So, Dr. McGuigan, to start us off, could you give us a little bit about your background and what your current role is?
Sure. To start with my current role, I'm currently a professor of strength and conditioning at Auckland University of Technology here in New Zealand. So I've been in that role now for 4 years. And as part of that role, it's really looking at supervising postgraduate students, conducting research, teaching. Prior to that, I was with High Performance Sport New Zealand, so working as a sports scientist. Going right back to the start, I suppose I should. I started off doing my undergraduate in physical education at the University of Otago. So I did that. Then I've moved around quite a lot and had a number of different roles, mainly in universities and teaching environments. So I've done some time in the United States post-PhD. My PhD was done in Australia at Southern Cross University with Rob Newton. After that, I went and did a postdoc at Ball State University with Bill Kramer. After that, I was in a faculty position at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. And then made the move back to Australia and was at Edith Cowan University for several years, where I headed up the Master of Exercise Science Strength and Conditioning. It's an online course that's been running now, I think, for more than 10 years. And then after that, I made the move back to New Zealand, where I'm from originally. Subsequent to that, working in high performance sport and then making the transition back into academia. Along the way, I guess I've been quite fortunate that I've had the opportunity, as well as being a researcher and working in university environments, to work with a number of high performance sports as well. So doing research, but also some consultancy with different sports such as Australian rules football, rugby union, rugby league, etc.
As I mentioned in the onset, what we're going to be talking today is a little bit about strength and power profiling. I was wondering, what made you interested in exploring this topic and researching it and looking at strength and power profiling in elite athletes?
I think it's really come from my background. I think, like most people in the field, I'm really passionate and interested in sport. And growing up, I played a lot of team sports, but also was really interested in strength sports as well. So I actually competed in powerlifting. So, and then as well as that, you know, as part of the sports I played, I always did a lot of resistance training myself. So, you know, from that, I really developed a really keen interest. And the other thing that I was really interested in growing up as well was the science side of things as well. So it's just really a combination of my practical background, but also being just really interested in trying to understand how we can develop strength and power, how we can assess it. You know, when I was playing sport, when I was competing, you know, there wasn't really a lot of sophisticated testing that went on. But, you know, I think it was good grounding for me in terms of understanding training and how to develop those capacities. And then as I went through my undergraduate, it was just, a natural progression of, you know, wanting to understand more about the underlying science and evidence behind those particular areas.
Back when High Performance Training for Sport, which I believe was edited by David Joyce and Dan Lewenden, he wrote Chapter 1, which was Evaluating Athletic Capabilities. And I was actually reading that along with some of the material that you sent me. Looking at it, I came up with a bunch of questions that I thought would be interesting to delve into further. The first one being, when it comes to strength and power testing in athletes, you know, what are some considerations that coaches should have in mind before even starting the testing process?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think it's fundamental to any type of assessment that we do with athletes. There's a real danger, I think, and we traditionally, I think, in sports science probably haven't done this very well, is that we do tend to do a lot of testing, but I'm not sure that there's a lot of thought or foundation that kind of goes into really understanding why we're doing the testing. So I think it's really important to take a step back before you do any type of assessment or any testing of athletes and really understand what are the important components of the sport. So I think just the initial starting point is really just that basic needs analysis. So really looking at the sport, getting a really good understanding of the sport. If it's a team sport, what are some of the differences in terms of maybe positions, the demands? And then from there, I think you've got a really good foundation initially where you can start to go through and identify what are the important physical capacities to test. And if you look at it from a strength power perspective, it's then delving in and saying, well, what are the key tests that I need to do? So I think that's one thing that's really important, is that basic needs analysis. I've also felt it's really important to take time to talk to the coaches that are in the sport as well, just to get their understanding and knowledge about what the demands of the sport are from a strength power perspective. And then I think the other thing that's really good now is we do have a lot of published research literature that's available on a lot of these sports. So that, I think, is another really important go-to when you are developing your battery of tests that you're going to do, is have a look at the literature, see what people have done previously, what are the tests they've used, which tests are the reliable tests. And then I think if you do those three things, I think you've developed a pretty good base in terms of then going through and identifying what the key tests are that you need to look at.
Being a strength conditioning coach myself, I know that many of my colleagues go through this process as well with sport coaches. One of the questions that obviously gets asked many times is, you know, why is strength and power profiling important? And it's a little bit easier when it's a contact sport, for example, when it's rugby or American football, to sell the sport coaches on that. But when it's other sports, it becomes a little bit more difficult. Having been both in the research setting, the practical setting, how have you dealt with that? And why do you feel that strength and power profiling is important?
Yeah, again, that's another great question. I think there's probably two aspects to it. I think from just the strength power side of things, I think for most sports that we deal with now, there's pretty good evidence to show that they are important capacities for athletes. So even looking at, say, endurance sports, I think there's enough evidence out there, published research, which shows that for those sports that developing those capacities is important and is going to help performance. The other thing that is being clearly shown as well is its role in injury prevention. So that, as an initial starting point, I think when you are speaking with coaches, I think the thing they're going to be most interested in, obviously, is, you know, how does this make my athletes better? And then the other side of that as well is, are they going to be injured less as well? So if you can sell them on that, then you're starting off from a pretty good position of strength, I would have said. So that's kind of the first thing. And then the other thing that I think with strength and profiling really plays an important role, and This is something we haven't done really well in our field, I don't think, as well. Again, we're really good at coming up with lots of different tests that we can use to looking at assessing strength and power. But for me, the fundamental part of assessment as well is that we're able to use that assessment to inform our programming. So that's another piece of the puzzle that I think is important to sell coaches on as well, is to say, look, not only are these important capacities for us to know about in the athletes, but it's really fundamental information that we need to be able to help our programming. So knowing what are the strengths and weaknesses of our athletes, and that's what the strength power profiling should do. It should help you to identify what are the things that the athlete needs to work on, and then if you're doing it on a regular basis, you're going to be able to make adjustments as you go through the program. It's look, again, I think doing a series of tests and then assessing the athletes at the end of a preseason is probably not going to be as useful as coming up with a system where you can actually get some more objective information on a more regular basis that you can drive your programming. So that's another really important part of it as well, I think, is just helping people to understand that we're not just doing this to assess the capacities, we're actually doing it to help us inform what we're doing with our training programs and to optimize those training programs as best we can.
I know one of the publications that you sent me over was actually called Strength and Power Profiling of Athletes, Selecting Tests and How to Use the Information for Program Design, that you collaborated with Dr. Stuart Cormack and Dr. Nicholas Gill, who's with the strength and conditioning with All Zealand, the New Zealand All Blacks rugby. I guess one of the questions that also comes about is, after you've done your needs analysis, what are other considerations that you need to have in mind when trying to determine the appropriate strength and power test to execute with your team?
Another good question. I think the starting point is to look at the sport you're working with. I think that's a really important thing. So as much as possible, you want to look at your strength power profiling from that as your starting point. I mean, there's going to be some general tests that you can use that are going to apply across most sports, but I've always thought it's important to look at that sport you are working with and then really use that as a good starting point to say, okay, well, what are the needs of that particular sport from a strength power perspective? Because there's going to be sports where, take the example of American football, where fundamentally for all positions is very important components, but then there may be other team sports where it's an important capacity but not to the same extent. So that will help, I guess, make a decision for you as a practitioner around what tests you need to use and how extensive your testing battery is. The other thing that's really important as well is to look at your circumstances that you're working in as well. So you know, there's going to be a lot of coaches out there I know who are working across multiple sports and they've got multiple athletes and squads that they're dealing with. And that's going to be quite different, I think, if you are, say, dealing with just one sport, one team. One of the things that Nick Gill talks about a lot is this idea of real versus ideal. So ideally, we want to come up with a strength and power profile that is going to be something we can implement and is going to give us really good specific information on that sport. The real world might be, for example, say a coach in college who's working with multiple teams and has 100 plus athletes. It's going to be much more difficult, I think, then for that person to go in and do a really extensive strength and power battery and individualize it across sports. So I think those are key considerations to look at. So looking at the sport you're working in, but then also looking at your environment you're working in and what's going to be something that's going to be feasible for you to do.
Yeah, and I know that's something that is sometimes difficult with resources, as you mentioned, at the university level when you have so many student athletes trying to figure out when you can test and then retest because there's a lot of variables.
And the other thing there, James, I think too, that's important as well is it's around the resources is what do you have available. So your strength and power profiling is going to look quite different if you have access to technology, say like a force plate or linear position transducers. But if you're a coach working in a high school and you've got a tape measure and a stopwatch, then you're going to be quite limited in terms of what you could do from that perspective. So I think that's the other thing as well, is within your circumstances, looking at the resources and the technology that you have available. But that's not to say that you can't come up with a really effective battery that you can do without technology. I think it's a mistake, I think, sometimes to think you need a lot of expensive equipment to do a strength power profile. I think there's obviously, if you've got a weight room, then there's some pretty simple things you can do in terms of strength testing of your athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. For those coaches who don't have access to technology, you mentioned that, of course, there's basic ways in order to get a strength and power profile for athletes. What would be some key recommendations that you would have for them in terms of creating a basic battery?
If I was to make a general recommendation, it would be, say, you want to come up with a strength assessment, obviously, where you can get some indication of maximal strength of the athletes. And so then it's a matter of, okay, well, what are the key exercises that I can do that for? I don't think you necessarily need to do that for every single exercise that you're going to use in your program, but you might decide, okay, I'm going to do two or three key exercises that form the basis of my programming. So they're going to be my go-to strength tests that I'm going to use. And then in terms of looking at more of the power aspect of things, then even without technology, that measuring a broad jump, horizontal jump with a tape measure, doing a vertical jump, same thing, you can get some good information. So looking at, even with vertical jumping, doing a counter movement jump where the athlete uses their stretch shortened cycle versus a static jump where the athlete will hold in the squat position for 2 to 3 seconds and then jump, and then looking at the ratio between those two, that's something we've done quite a lot of work on as well. Look, ideally you like to be able to delve into things a bit more deeply and use potentially a force plate to look at some of the underlying things in terms of how the athlete is doing the movement, how they're producing power, the force, velocity, all of those things. But for a coach that doesn't have access to that, there's some options in terms of just looking at the performance, as I said, with measuring the height or the distance jumped. But then the other good thing now is, I think, you know, we're starting to see more and more financially viable options as well, where you've got accelerometers and smartphones now, and people are looking at developing apps where they can measure some of these things. So I think there are options out there as well where you can actually start to get under the hood a bit more in terms of understanding what's happening with the athlete. And then the other thing as well, I think, around the strength power testing as well, is we can often as coaches focus on the outputs and the results, but it's also really important to look at how the athletes are producing the movement as well. So, you know, a simple video analysis of the athlete jumping is something that can give you some really important information. So, and those are all things that don't really require any great investment in terms of equipment. It's just the time and the energy to go through and do the testing and then do the analysis of it that's going to be important.
One portion of the publication that you sent me with strength and power profile in athletes that really stood out to me was the area where you actually mentioned individualizing testing batteries based on position within that specific team, whether it could be a team playing rugby, a team playing soccer. Each specific position has different demands. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that and why you do suggest having an individualized testing battery, if possible.
Look, again, I've always questioned, I've been as guilty of this as anybody, but the amount of testing that we do with our athletes. So I'm always looking for ways where we can fine tune our testing. And I think one way you can do it is to look at the positional differences within your squad and really ask the question, well, what are the important tests that we need to do? And we know now, and there's so much published information out there on these sports, which is great, that is clearly showing that there's differences. So, you know, take the example of soccer. We could look at a goalkeeper is obviously going to be quite different in terms of the physical demands of that position versus, say, a striker. So do we need to, as a strength and conditioning professional, have the same set testing battery for those two positions? I don't think you do. But the problem comes about, and which was we've discussed already, is that is it going to be feasible for you as a practitioner to have these set batteries for by position? Ideally, I think it would be useful to do that, and you may be reducing some of the burden on athletes in terms of the amount of testing that you have to do. So I think, you know, it's worthwhile looking at. But look, you've got to weigh it up in terms of the environment you're working with, and it may be easier if you're dealing with a squad of 60 athletes that you're going to have to come up with something which is a bit more standardized. However, there's no reason why, when you set up your testing, you can't have a series of stations, which is typically how people will do it. You could have the athletes do certain tests and not others. I think, again, fundamentally it comes back to that question, and I always sort of ask this of myself when I'm doing any testing, you know, why are you doing the test? What information is it going to give me? And then how am I going to be able to use this information? Now, if you can check off each of those questions and you've got a logical answer for each of them, then great, you can go ahead and do that. But I think if you follow that as a kind of a checklist, then it might help identify for you if there are things where you can say, well, you know, fundamentally this test is not really giving me much useful information. So if it's more about just doing it as part of a process, I think it's important that it's something that really adds value to what you're doing with your program. Is something I would really recommend people think about.
One thing that was mentioned before is obviously testing and then retesting. And this is something that sometimes drives me crazy, because I see a strength coach testing their team during the preseason and then perhaps not testing them all the way until they're about to leave for the offseason. And I've seen this at the university where a test is done in August and then there's not a test until May of the following year. So obviously you have to weigh different factors. Right. And as we said, you know, what can work in an ideal world and what can work in the real world. What would be the minimal testing and retesting that you think someone can get away with and still get useful information that they can act upon?
Yeah, look, another great question. I'm no doubt said this a few times already, but I think it's one of those ones where, again, it depends on the sport you're dealing with. Look, I think in terms of the strength, I don't think that's one that's too difficult. I think that's something you can do more regularly, and I don't think you necessarily with measuring strength, it's not something you need to always set aside a testing day to say, okay, we're going to test strength. That's something you can monitor on a more regular basis. I think just estimating it from, say, 3 RM loads or 5 RM loads that athletes might be using in training. So I'm kind of always reluctant to kind of say this is the general rule of thumb that you should say how often you need to test something like strength or even power. Because I think it's something you can monitor on a reasonably regular basis, and I think it's important that we do. Look, I agree with you. I think that there's probably not a lot of value to testing or having such a long period between testing sessions. But I think if you implement a system where you are getting that regular feedback, you know, I think ideally you would try after each block of training that. And it depends on how the coach sets up their program. But, you know, if you're using 3 or 4 week blocks of training, I don't see any reason why you can't have some sort of system implemented where you're getting that information. Now, it might be that you don't, as I said, set aside days where you're doing 1 RM testing necessarily. And I sometimes wonder whether how much value there is to doing that. But if you have something in place where you know you're getting a really good estimate of the maximal strength of the athlete, then look, I would encourage people to do that more regularly. In terms of looking at some of the power measurements, that's another one where I don't think there's issues of implementing that on a more regular basis. So yeah, look, every 4 weeks or so, every 6 weeks or so, I think would be something you could do. I know in the past when we've used strength power profiling with the team sports, you know, typically how we do it is we don't necessarily have set testing days as such, but what we would do is incorporate it into a training session. So we would have and I suppose for most of the sports this would probably happen every 6 weeks or so, but we would have within a particular session for that week, we would have it have a station or two stations set aside. So one station would be looking at some of the vertical jump testing for the power, and then another station for looking at some of the horizontal power assessment. And so the athletes would come in, do their session as normal, but part of what they would do on that particular day is do those assessments. And that's quite a good way to do it, I think, in that it allows you to not really interfere, I guess, with the overall program that the athletes are going through, but it also allows you to do your testing on a more regular basis. And you know, for us, when I've worked in Australian rules football, rugby, netball, we've generally used that approach, and it's worked really well. And the good thing about it too is it gives us a bit more regular objective information on the power aspect of the athlete. So you know, it allows us to inform programming on a more regular basis, because the thing about these capacities is they can change quite quickly over time. So the more regular testing you can get. But on the other side of it, you don't want to make it such that it's a burden and it's going to add extra time that they're in the gym training. So it's trying to get that balance between the training and the assessment. But I've always been really interested in looking for ways that you can incorporate testing into training. I still think there's a place to have sessions set aside where you do your testing, but I think strength power stuff is really good. It lends itself really well to incorporating it into the training environment, and so therefore you can get more regular information.
No, and I think that's a great point to bring up, because I think many times when people think about testing, they think about their traditional testing day where they go and tell their athletes, hey, we're going to go hit the 3RM back squat, bench press, and what other major lift? And they don't really think about evaluating it throughout the entire process. I find that happens quite often with some strength coaches.
Sure.
The other thing when it comes to testing and retesting, for sport coaches, it tends to be really black and white when you give them the data. They see someone who was benching 225 and now they see them benching 240, and I'm talking about pounds, not kilos. And they're like, oh, that's awesome. You know, we've made progress. But for the strength and conditioning coach, I feel like it has to be a little bit more nuanced. So how would a strength and conditioning coach try to determine, you know, what is the smallest worthwhile change between two battery of tests for that specific time period?
Right. Yeah. I think, look, that's another really interesting area, which, you know, it's been really good. I think the last few years there's been a bit of a shift, I think, where people are really trying to understand this area in terms of getting our heads around what is a worthwhile change in performance. And with a strength power type of area, I think it is really fundamental, because you need to know that if your athlete has improved or changed on a particular test, does that what does that actually mean? And this has been a real area of interest for me. You know, I've been really influenced by the work of Dr. Will Hopkins. So he's done a lot of work in this area, and there's a lot of really good practitioners out there, I think, that are starting to embrace this concept. I think the simple approach is to, you firstly, you need to understand the test that you're using. And then a really important part about that is to know something about the reliability of that test. And when I talk about reliability, I'm talking about the consistency of the test. So if we test our athletes in the gym today, and then we bring them back a couple of days later, we want to know that we're getting reliable results. So, that is that there's not a lot of noise associated with the tests. So I think that's a really good starting point to look at coming up with tests that are reliable, that you know are going to be consistent. So that's always, I think, the good starting point. And one of the things I kind of talk about in the chapter, and it's really just based on the work that that Will has done over the years, but this concept of smallest worthwhile change, and it can be a little confusing for people, I think, but there's a number of ways you can do it. I think you can look at the noise or the coefficient of variation of the test, so how much variation there is with the test as a kind of a starting point to determine what you should be looking for in terms of a change in the test. The other way that's really useful, I think, is to look at, and I always encourage practitioners to do this within their own athletes and their own setting, but is to establish a lot of this information on your own athletes. And a really good way to do that is to look at your group of athletes, get a really good solid baseline of what testing information looks like, and you can really just do a simple calculation of the standard deviation between your athletes. And then the recommendation is that if you calculate that between athlete standard deviation and then multiply that by 0.2, that gives you a pretty good indication of what you might expect to see as far as the smallest worthwhile changes in that particular test. Now it can be a lot of work from at the front end of this process, because it's something you probably do want to do for each of the individual tests that you're going to do. So I think that's ideally the way to do it. It is possible to delve into the literature and look at if there's published work out there on similar groups of athletes, and looking at and the good thing now is a lot of people are starting to report this information for coaches. So another thing you can do is go to the literature and look and see, is there a similar sport athlete cohort? I think it's important to make sure you're comparing very similar scenarios. So if you're working with youth athletes, for example, you wouldn't want to be relying on published reliability data and smallest worthwhile changes in elite athletes, because they're going to be quite different. So that's another thing you can do. And then the other thing that's really good now too is on the web. There's a number of good resources where people have come up with spreadsheets and different things that people can use that can allow you to do that. So look, I think short answer is try and do it specific to your cohort of athletes and do it that way would be a good way to start. But it's really a worthwhile area, I think, to spend some time doing a bit of reading on and looking at some of the different approaches that are out there.
Yeah, for someone who's interested in learning a little bit more about that, are there any particular resources that you would recommend?
Sure. I think Martin Boucher has published some really good work in this area. So, you know, he's one of the top researchers in terms of sports performance. So anything that Martin has published, he's got a number of publications where he's really delved into this. YouTube is always a good source of information. There's a couple of different people out there. John Life here in New Zealand has a really good channel. Excel Sports, I think it's something like that. And he goes through, in one of his tutorials, is developing a spreadsheet where you can do this as well. So I think those would be good starting points for getting some more information on this.
Yeah, and if you think of any other ones, you can let me know after the podcast, and I'll make sure to link it in the show notes when I publish it.
Sure. Yeah, I can certainly do that. I think there's probably some other ones that I'm forgetting that I can pass on to you later on, and then listeners can go to those and read a bit more about that area.
Up to now, we've really been talking about strength and power testing, but another very important part of it, and we've touched upon it slightly, is with sport coaches. And obviously, once you've collected this, you want to help establish a way that you can visualize the data and then present and report to the sport coaches in an accessible way that they can understand it. What are some recommendations that you would have in terms of data presentation when it comes to sport coaches? And I know this is something that a lot of people struggle with because they're trying to figure out what should be in it and if they should be presenting in a certain way. And I think part of it is establishing a dialogue with the sport coaches and seeing what they want. But based on your experience, is there anything else that you would suggest or add to that?
Yeah, that's another good question. The starting point should always be having that dialogue initially, I would have said. So if possible, trying to get some feedback early on as to what the coaches want from that process. So if you talk to them right away, rather than investing a lot of time and effort in coming up with what you think is this brilliant report, that just sits there. And if it's not going to be read and interpreted by the coach or the end user, then you need to question why you're doing it. So for me, it's always been that's been a really important part of the process, is to have that dialogue sooner rather than later, and then get feedback. The other thing you could do potentially is show a couple of options of what you're thinking of in terms of ways to present the information, and get that feedback early on. So I think that's a good way to start off. I found with the reporting of information, there's a number of different things I think really important and critical in this process, and that this is again something we haven't done well as a field, I think, over the years, is that the information does need to be reported back as quickly as possible. And I think if you are going to get coaches on board with what you're doing, that's really, really a critical first step. So it's getting some feedback from them in terms of what they want, but then it's, if you're doing a testing day or you've done some testing within your session, then feeding that back to the coaches as soon as you can is I think a really good first step to go through. The other thing about it in this area, I think, is we do need to keep things as simple as possible. It's, you can spend a lot of time on this process and come up with these really long reports and really get into the visualization and agonize over how it looks and what colors you use and all that sort of thing. But I've always found that coaches will respond to things that are really simple, that have some key messages, and that's easy for them to interpret. So I think it's not making assumptions about what that looks like. I think it's why that part of the process where you do talk to the coach and get some feedback is so vital. So it's, I think, dialogue with the coaches, it's keeping it really simple, and then it's making sure that it's fed back to them as quickly as possible. Those would be some key recommendations that I would have. And then the other thing that I think is also really important is to sort of is consider how that information is going to be read by the end user. So, you know, oftentimes, you know, traditionally for us, we've, speaking from my perspective anyway, often, you know, historically done those one page or simple reports where you print it off and you give it to the coach, or it's sent as a PDF. I think we also really need to think about how that information is going to be used. So, I mean, based on my experience recently anyway, a lot of times, particularly if you're talking about athletes and coaches as well, a lot of times they're going to be looking at it on their mobile device. So if you're coming up with some way of visualizing the information and making a report, it's something that's going to be easy for you to push out to that device, but also bearing in mind that they're going to be reading it on that device. So that might be important to consider if you are comparing that to, say, what you could do on a printed piece of paper. So fundamentally, they're quite different things to think about. So that's something that I've sort of been more aware of in the last few years as well, is how people are looking at them. I mean, ideally, you do want to be sitting down with the coach and the athletes and going through the information with them as well. So, you know, if you have that opportunity. But a lot of times now, we coaches may be working remotely with athletes or coaches, and so they're sending information to them when they're away at a camp or overseas at a competition or whatever it is. So you do need to consider that part of the process as well.
Yeah, I noticed that for your strength and power profile, you actually use radar plots and obviously some data visualization individuals seem to not care for them. I personally found that at least when I've used them with coaches and athletes, they tend to like them. Do you feel that that's a good data visualization tool, and what's been your experience with it?
Yeah, I think I've used those a lot. I was probably influenced a lot early on working with Rob Newton. I know he's used them quite a lot as well. And just from my experience, it's one of those forms of visualization that, you know, like any tool, it's got limitations. But I've always found that coaches and athletes do intuitively understand them really well. And I think particularly if I put my sort of strength and conditioning practitioner hat on, I think for us, when we're looking at using the information to inform programming, I've always found it a really good way to show a coach and an athlete where are the areas they need to work on. That's where you know, I've tended to use them quite a lot. And that's just, again, been based on the feedback that I've had from the coaches and the athletes that I've worked with. And it's been pretty consistent that they've found those to be really useful. And for me, you know, when I've been doing the programming side as well, I've found them really useful as well in terms of making those adjustments based on that information. So I think it's one tool that I think can be really useful. You always need to be mindful, I think, when you are looking at any type of visualization tool that you are going to use. I think it's really important that if it's going to be presented to the end user, then that should really be an important starting point for you. I mean, it needs to reflect the information accurately. That's really critical. But if the end user can't really interpret the information, they don't understand it, it just confuses them, then that's when you need to think about, well, is there a different approach that could be used? But, you know, speaking for myself and from my experience, then, you know, I found them to be useful. The other thing I like about them too is that they're a nice way to not only give a snapshot of where the athlete is sitting at that particular point, but you can actually do the comparison against the squad that you might be working with. And then the other thing as well, you can track over time, so you can show two or three different time points, so then the coach can visualize how things are changing. And then you can also set benchmarks as well. So if you have particular targets for an area, then they can show that quite well. So I think, it's something that I've used and continue to use and have found them to be quite effective.
The last thing I want to talk about, and I think this is going to be extremely useful for the strength and conditioning guys listening to this podcast, is strength and power decay. And I know that you've published several papers in this area. And one of the great concerns, especially when it comes to in-season programming for strength coaches, is retention and decay rates of strength, speed, and power. So I was hoping that you could discuss your overall findings and based on the papers that you've published and just perhaps some practical advice.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's been an area that I've been really interested in. You know, I think like all coaches who are working with athletes, and particularly team sport athletes, it's such a challenging area to, and I think it's fundamental for understanding it if you are going to program effectively, particularly in season. So, yeah, we've done quite a lot of work in this area looking at that. One of our PhD students here at AUT, Travis McMaster, did a whole lot of work in this around team sport as well. But I've had other projects over the years where we've looked at a number of different team sports. And I think it's one of those ones where it really does seem to be quite individual, depending on the athlete, and there seems to be some differences in terms of the sport. So it's a really hard area to study from a research perspective, because it's a lot of these studies, when you are working in high performance sport environments, there's so many variables that it's so difficult to control. So to really get a good gauge on and make solid recommendations across the board, I think is pretty difficult. And the other thing about it too is there isn't a ton of there's probably more stuff on the strength aspect, which, because it's relatively easy to measure, but probably less on the power aspect, and the speed aspect is not as much either. And it's the speed part is not something that I've researched as much anyway. But I think in terms of like a general overview for team sports, like I say, it seems to be quite individual. But as a general rule of thumb, you know, in terms of strength, it seems to be probably things can be maintained reasonably well, sort of 21 days to 30 days seems to be around where you will start to see a drop off, at least in sort of team sport athletes. So that's what the research would seem to indicate. Travis did a really nice meta-analysis a couple of years ago in sports medicine, where he went through and looked at a number of different team sports, and that seemed to be what was shown for those particular sports. With some of the research around some of the power measures, like, and most people have looked at saying using something as vertical jump height as a basic substitute for that, would suggest maybe that can be maintained for a bit longer, but it's not an overwhelming body of research on that area. So I think probably one of those ones where as a strength and conditioning practitioner, it's something you do need to be really monitoring quite closely in your own athletes and within your own sport. But there's no doubt that in season, that's an aspect that we can't afford as coaches to let it drop off the radar, because you know, clearly it's something that decreases, and it's one of those capacities when you're talking about strength here that you can maintain it. And actually there's a lot of really good research now that shows that, you know, perhaps we shouldn't be looking at it from a maintenance perspective, that it actually is possible to make improvements even in really well-trained athletes in some of these capacities. So I think for me that's always more evidence for that period of time where you don't want to be ignoring that. You want to be including it in your program on a regular basis and making sure that it's done as a training part of training on a consistent basis throughout the season, because otherwise you are going to see that drop off.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point to bring up, because it's not necessarily about trying to rein people in during the in-season. As research has shown, there could be some possible improvements made. I think the real thought process before is we try to peak them, and then we try just to maintain that strength and power all throughout the in-season. And I think some research is actually indicating now that, you know, maintenance is perhaps not the right term. We should actually be searching for improvements.
Yeah. exactly.
The last thing I usually like to cover in all of my podcasts is just recommendations for young coaches. But in this instance, seeing how you have been both on the practical side, working in elite sports, and also working as a researcher, I was actually wondering if you would perhaps have some recommendations for young researchers that are looking to get into this space.
Yeah, no, fine. I think a really important thing is to, you know, if you're interested in doing sports performance research, then I think it's critical that you spend time around sports and talking with coaches. So, I mean, that's something that I've always done, and I think it's really helped me throughout my journey through this, is that I've regularly spent time with coaches in sports, coaching myself as well, that I think that gives you a really good perspective on what are some important research questions. So, you know, I think there can be sometimes a tendency to spend a lot of time in the lab, and in a university or college environment, you can lose sight of what's important if you're not out there in the field being involved on a regular basis with some of these aspects. So I think that's really, really important for any aspiring sports performance researcher, is spending that time in sports as a coach and talking to coaches and other practitioners as well. The other thing I think is really important is to read really widely. So, you know, I think you'll have certain areas that you're really interested in, you know, and I've got my areas of strength, power, and monitoring of athletes, but I've always made a point to try and read really widely in other areas, and try and talk to colleagues who are working in different areas of research, because I think you can always learn things from that as well. So that would be another thing that I think that's really important. So those two things I think are really fundamental. And then the other thing I've always think has been really good over the years is making the time for the sort of professional development opportunities. So there's conferences, and you know, the good thing now is there's a lot more conferences that are geared towards applied sports performance researchers. So the NSCA conference, the Australian Strength Conditioning Conference, there's a number of really good ones around that are really worthwhile going, not only from the perspective of getting a chance to hear about the research and the top practitioners, but it's also outside of the workshops and the lectures, where you get a chance to talk to other researchers and coaches, where I think you can pick up a lot of really good information. And then just taking the time to explore PD opportunities, where you go and spend some time with different sports and different environments. And so any of those sorts of opportunities are never wasted. I think you can really get some good information and good experience. Yeah, I think the more time you can spend talking to people and discussing some of this stuff, I think is really worthwhile.
Dr. McGuigan, if anyone has any questions or comments about anything you said on the podcast, or just wants to reach out for some further information, what's the best way they can do so?
I think probably Twitter is a good avenue these days. So, I'm very happy to hear from people via that. So my contact there is Mike_McGuigan. So that's probably the easiest way.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Dr. McGuigan, for coming on here on Friday morning in New Zealand.
Yes, it is Friday morning.
Yeah, I sometimes get confused with the time zone difference, but I appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your knowledge and about research in terms of strength, power profiling, and how it can be applied in a practical setting. So I really appreciate that you accepted the invitation.
Thanks very much, James. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of the Historic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please make sure to head over to iTunes to leave a review and rating. It really helps others discover their show. If you have any questions or comments for Dr. Mike McGuigan, just head over to my website, historicperformance.net, and look at the show notes. His contact information is there. I'll see you guys next week.